This is the Mickey Miles and More podcast, your one stop for information on Disney races, Disney vacations, Disney theme parks, and more. Now, here are your hosts for the Mickey Miles and More podcast, Chris Eliopoulos and Mike Scopa.
Welcome back, Mickey Miles. A few weeks back, I told the story about falling asleep overnight in Walt Disney's Magic Kingdom theme park. It was just a story. But today, I'm going to tell you a true story about the night I actually did spend in the Magic Kingdom. I wasn't alone. There were some friends who were there with me, and I'm sure you will recognize some of the names as I relate to how this event and this evening went. This was promoted as One More Disney Day, and it took place starting at 6 o'clock in the morning on February 29th, 2012, where, for the first time ever, both Walt Disney World's Magic Kingdom and the Disneyland Park remained open for 24 hours. When I first heard this announcement, I wasn't sure how to react. Maybe this was because I had no plans of being in Orlando that day or visiting the Magic Kingdom. However, I became curious about a number of things. I had been in the Magic Kingdom countless number of times. And thanks to an extended extra magic hour evening, I had even been in the park until 3:30 in the morning. However, unlike that extra magic hour evening, this last day in February 2012 was receiving a bit of a promotion and had caused me to wonder quite a bit and think about some questions that perhaps maybe others were wondering as well. So here are the questions that were running around in my head, and think about if these would be the questions you would be wondering about. My first question was, will the park reach capacity that day or that evening? And if so, when? That was the first question that crossed my mind. I didn't expect that the park would see Christmas, Thanksgiving, Easter, or 4th of July level crowds because it was not on a holiday. It was in the middle of the week. I think it fell on a Wednesday, and I was sure the moms and dads with the young children wouldn't be out all night with the family. If the park were to exceed capacity, my guess would be that it would happen maybe late afternoon or early evening. I really was curious as to how long the park would admit guests through the turnstiles. Would it be 4 o'clock in the morning, 5 o'clock in the morning? I didn't know. Here's another question. Would there be any special parades or fireworks or special events? You know, when it comes like October 1st, sometimes we as guests get caught up in promotions and our expectations go through the roof. But there were no announcements regarding anything special happening for that 24-hour period. It was maybe celebrating leap year, so I didn't expect much. I had another question. Which attractions would be open all night? The Extra Magic Hours page at that time would have a list of what normally would be operating during that Extra Magic Hour evening. I expected some adjustments. On that particular time of the year, that day, Liberty Square Riverboat, Big Thunder Mountain Railroad, and Dumbo were all closed for refurbishment. So I knew that those attractions would not be running. And it remained to be seen what attractions would run the entire 24 hours. I was pretty sure that a cold night would influence guests to bypass Splash Mountain. I was also wondering, would there be both a sit-down and quick-service restaurants available? And you know, that's a very important question because guests would need fuel to help them navigate through the park all night. Normally, during extra magic evening hours at that time, the Magic Kingdom offered guests Casey's Corner, Cosmic Rays, Starlight Cafe, and Pecos Bill's Cafe for places to eat. The feeling was that there just would not be any sit-down restaurants open. Besides, when would you start serving breakfast? I did hope that there would be consideration to add Columbia Harbor House and Pinocchio Village House to the list, especially if the crowd levels exceeded the estimated 25,000 or so guests that usually were reported to attend such events as Mickey's Not So Scary Halloween Party and Mickey's Very Merry Christmas Party. How about shopping? Would guests be able to shop from 9 p.m. to 6 a.m.? I thought this was an interesting question. If I were the decision maker regarding which shops to keep open and for how long, I think I would seriously think about keeping all the shops open until midnight and then maybe a few open until 3 o'clock in the morning. The reason for this was to allow the cast members to tidy up the shops and get them stocked and ready for the next day. Plus, don't you think most shoppers will have completed their shopping by 3 a.m.? So, what attractions? I was thinking, what attractions would be the most popular during this particular event? I thought Space Mountain and Splash Mountain would be vying for those honors. Although Splash's popularity would be dictated by the evening temperatures. Remember, even though it's in Florida, it's February. I was sure Haunted Mansion and Pirates of the Caribbean and the Fantasyland dark rides would be visited quite frequently. Then I was thinking, what would be the best way to tour the park? Assuming you'd arrive at 9 o'clock that night and intend upon staying until 6 a.m., with five lands to tour, I would take my time and spend 1 to 2 hours in each land. I would either do consecutive visits to an attraction until I was tired of it and go on to the next attraction, or mix it up and jump from attraction to attraction. I would not jump from one land to another and backtrack. I would get my fill of a land and move on to the next one. I would probably start in Tomorrowland and work my way counterclockwise around the park. What about character meet and greets between midnight and 5 a.m.? What about character meet and greets between midnight and 5 in the morning? I think it's best to say that as the clock strikes 12, the odds of a photo opportunity with a character would begin to tumble. If there were to be any meet and greets, I guess they would occur in the early evening and before the last parade performance. Would there be any special merchandise available like they do for Mickey's Not So Scary and Mickey's Very Merry Christmas Party? Well, if this was an event that happened every year or several times a year, I would normally say yes, but I really didn't expect there would be merchandise such as that. Here's another question. If you were in charge, what kind of merchandise would you offer and how many items would you expect to sell? It's a gamble to do that, and that's why I didn't expect there would be any special merchandise. So we'll see. My next question would be, if the park was to see large crowds that evening, would FastPass, which was in operation at that time, would that be available throughout the night? I know it sounds like a silly question, but assuming the park could see high attendance that day, the thought had crossed my mind that the FastPass distribution areas could possibly stay open for an extra hour or two, but that would be a long shot. You know, I really miss the FastPass, and I wonder if they had such a promotion today, 21 more Disney day, would Genie Plus and Lightning Lane be used? If I am visiting the Walt Disney World that week, I wondered, should I even bother visiting the Magic Kingdom during the One More Disney Day event? Actually, the question really is, should I visit the Magic Kingdom that day and stay all night? To that question, I say it would depend upon what you wanted to get out of the experience. Are you hoping to get in as many attractions as you possibly can? Are you going just to say you did it? Are you anticipating some special event and don't want to miss it? Or are you just curious about the crowds, the attractions that will be open, which restaurants will be operating, etc., etc.? And then I asked this question of myself. I said, Mike, would you experience One More Disney Day if you can? Well, the answer was yes. I was curious about so many aspects of this promotion that I caved and decided I had to see what is going to happen firsthand. So I planned to be at the Magic Kingdom that day and planned to be at the theme park well before sunrise. If you're interested in what happened that day, then keep listening. Okay, let's go to February 29th, 2012. It's 3:45 in the morning, and here I am. I'm parked in the first row at the Ticket and Transportation Center parking lot. I walked over to the TTC, and I found 150 people already there waiting for the monorail. I was there no less than 5 minutes when a large contingent of guests arrived, which prompted the cast members to make use of the rope cues. I ended up in the right rope queue, which moved me about 20 people back from the monorail ramp. It was now 4:30 in the morning. Now let's move to 4:45 a.m. I managed to squeeze onto not the first, but the second monorail car headed for the Magic Kingdom. When the announcement came over that we would be among the first to enter the park that day, the car erupted with cheers. It was at that moment that the child in me was stirred to excitement. Imagine being a child on this day and how excited you would be to go to the Magic Kingdom. That's how it felt. 5 o'clock a.m. I checked in at the media table to the far left of the turnstiles, received my special wristband, and had my annual pass scanned. As I entered the park, I received my One More Disney Day Mickey ears and my special One More Disney Day button. I then waited with some other lucky folks for a rope drop. We were on the left side of the train station area. The right side turnstiles had hundreds of guests ready to head for their favorite attraction. Now, if you were standing in my shoes and turned about 125 degrees to your right, you would have seen Mickey and Minnie in pajamas in front of several media cameras covering this event. There were several local television stations covering the event. In fact, there was one right behind me talking to a family, and I may have been on local television that day. Or at least my back was on local television. Okay, it's 5:55 a.m. The Magic Kingdom's family of the day and the mayor proudly welcomed everyone to the Magic Kingdom, and we are allowed to enter. One point worth noting, this opening was very much like any other park day opening, as there was no special fireworks or music. Okay, it's 6:15 a.m., and once inside the Magic Kingdom, I headed over to the hospitality station at Tony's, where I received my gift, another hat and a One More Disney Day shirt, and enjoyed breakfast with my all-ears colleagues at that time, Deb Wills and Deb Coma, and my WDW Today podcast colleague, Mike Newell of Mouse World Radio. 7 a.m. to 9 a.m. After a pleasant breakfast at which we tried to map out exactly how we would navigate through the day, Mike Newell and I decided to try and do a live streamcast from the Magic Kingdom. With fingers crossed, we started at 7 o'clock and we were off. We walked down Main Street, USA, and interviewed a few folks and basically took our audience on a tour of the Magic Kingdom on this very special day. Many of those we talked to said they had planned to stay for the entire 24 hours, and in many cases had huge backpacks with supplies to help them make it through the day and the night ahead. We noticed that for the first few hours, the park's guests were very dispersed throughout the park. Much unlike Extra Magic Hour mornings, where only certain attractions were open. We walked around to all the lands and even took our viewers on the Walt Disney World Railroad and the Tomorrowland People Mover. It was great knowing that we were helping those who couldn't be there in person, but we were allowing them to see what was going on. As we walked into Adventureland and came across Aloha Isle, several of our viewers were saying, we should have a Dole Whip at 7:20 in the morning. Well, I had a Dole Whip. Mike had cold caffeine to give him a boost. As I had mentioned, since practically all the attractions were up and running at 6 a.m., most of the guests were looking at no more than a 15-minute queue line. Of course, this would change as the day wore on. This day was certainly a novelty for the cast members as well, and they seemed to have an extra spark of magic in their step. Broadcasting and talking for 2 straight hours can be quite challenging, but on this particular day, it was more of a novelty than a challenge. We closed the broadcast just after 9 a.m. and headed over to the All Ears Meet at Pinocchio House. We told everyone we would try to broadcast later on that day and evening. 11:30 in the morning, we attended the All Ears Meet at Pinocchio House, and with that came visits from old friends and also visits from new friends. We ran into a couple of guests who planned to eat at every restaurant and counter and experience every attraction and parade during the 24 hours the park would be open. I never saw them again after that meet, so I don't know if they were successful. As I ran down the list of park restaurants and asked if they had ADRs, advanced dining reservations, they nodded their heads, yes. But there is more. They also plan to experience every attraction, every parade, the nighttime fireworks, and every other component of the Magic Kingdom. They picked the right day to try and do this. I had also heard secondhand that there was a contingent of hardcore fans who were determined to experience 100 attractions that day. I guess that meant attending 100 attraction events, as the Magic Kingdom falls way short of 100 attractions. Slightly. 11:30 in the morning. After the meet, we seemed to be quite happy just sitting down and watching the crowd. As it was approaching noon, we realized we had been up for at least 9 hours already and had 18 hours to go. A few of us were getting tired and discussed leaving the park to rest and get recharged for the big overnight marathon. Before leaving, we decided to check the Haunted Mansion. It was then that we realized the crowds were beginning to build and that wait times would begin to grow. The 15-minute wait for Haunted Mansion at 7:30 was now approaching 45 minutes at midday. Yikes. I had a concern that the park would hit capacity later in the day and early evening when the other three parks closed. Now we move to 12:30 p.m. I left the Magic Kingdom and headed back to my room. I had parked so close to the Ticket and Transportation Center, I walked to my rental car. Along the way back to my room, I stopped for lunch and jotted down some notes regarding what I wanted to accomplish when I returned later in the day. My first goal was, of course, to make sure I got into the Magic Kingdom. Now it's 1:45 p.m. I arrived at my room and I realized I had been up for almost 12 hours. That plus the fact I had slept only a few hours the night before in anticipation of this day. That made it easy for me to quickly nod off for a very important nap. Now it's 5:45 p.m. No sooner did I fall asleep when my alarm went off. Holy cow, I slept for 4 hours, but it seemed like only 4 minutes. I took a refreshing shower, checked on my supplies, which included an extra shirt, extra batteries, and an assortment of protein bars and water for the long haul. I was ready for part two of this marathon day. The shower dislodged any cobwebs and I put on some fresh touring clothes for the evening and, of course, for the following morning. 6:30 p.m. As I drove through the Magic Kingdom toll plaza, I noticed in the rearview mirror that there seemed to be quite a few sets of headlights following me. This caused me to think that the night would indeed be special, and it was. As I left the toll plaza and made my way to the parking lot, my thoughts were validated. There was a long line to get into the parking lot, and for a moment, I thought I might not get a parking space, especially when I noticed the line of cars in front of me was being directed into the Mulan lot, which was the last lot on the Hero's side. Yikes. This was truly a harbinger of what was to be later in the night. Make no mistake about it. I had thoughts that this night would be crowded, but traffic was a bit more than I expected. Getting to the parking lot was an experience. Guests trying to leave the TTC parking lot had a real challenge trying to weave their way around the cars coming into the lot itself. It took almost 10 minutes for me to get from the toll plaza to my eventual parking spot. Again, I parked in the Hero section and in the Mulan portion. The Mulan portion was the absolute last portion in the Hero section. And for the record, I was in the third row from the back. So you can guess what word was running through my head. Capacity. Some 15 hours earlier, I was parked in the first row of the villains section. That was quite a difference. I immediately texted and called a number of friends who I knew were intending to return to the park that evening and told them to head for the park ASAP. The tram lines were long, so I decided to forego waiting for what would easily be 15 minutes just to have a shot at getting on one and decided to walk to the Ticket and Transportation Center along with about 50 or 60 other people. 7 p.m. As I approached the Magic Kingdom turnstiles, again I got the feeling that the crown jewel of Walt Disney World would be experiencing a most unusual evening crowd level. One, what I was now calling one more Disney day, the evening edition. 7:15. Well, I was right. There seemed to be a lot of energy along Main Street, USA. I noticed a long line to get into the fire station where guests would sign up for the new Sorcerers of the Magic Kingdom experience. Before catching up with my colleagues, most of whom were not at the park for the evening push, I decided to just roam around the park and make some observations that appeared to be unique for this evening. As I walked around the park, I noticed that the quick service and counter service eateries seemed to have longer lines than usual. My guess was that those who had planned ahead had taken up all the sit-down restaurant reservations. Another observation, which would prove to be something I would notice all night long, was the number of guests in line for the Sorcerers of the Magic Kingdom game. Every kiosk I came across had at least a dozen guests in line waiting to see how they would fare in this game. I found myself texting and tweeting and emailing and posting on Facebook and taking photos more than I had originally planned. Within an hour or two, I noticed my phone was really going through its battery real fast. As I made my way to Tomorrowland, I noticed just how crowded the park was. It was so crowded that there were folks on the bridge to Tomorrowland waiting to see Wishes. The crowd surge was almost into Tomorrowland. In fact, the edge of the crowd was in Tomorrowland. I decided to take in the Carousel of Progress. There were only five other guests in the attraction with me. I almost fell asleep. When I left Carousel of Progress, I ran into a few folks who told me of their escapades that day and how they were holding up. I had run into these folks when I first entered the park that morning, and they seemed to be still energized and ready to go. 9:15 p.m. I checked with my colleagues and made arrangements to catch up with them later in the night, and I grabbed a quick bite at Pinocchio Village House. I could not find an outlet to charge my phone and made a mental note to do so. Then I remembered earlier in the day when I was with Mike Newell how we found outlets at Columbia Harbor House. I made my way there and after a while found a table near an outlet. Success! I plugged in my phone, did a little social media work, and wrote down some notes. Some 10 minutes after sitting there, I could hear screams building from some young children. Now, usually young children can, of course, be expected to get tired and let their parents know it's time to go. But wow, the volume on the screams I was hearing was more than I was used to. I glanced at the time. It was approaching 10 p.m. I then glanced at where the screams were coming from. There were two families sitting down, and there was a total of 5 young children between the two families. I noticed all the family members had the One More Disney Day mouse ears on. That told me that they were among the first 2,000 guests to enter the park that morning at, wait for it, 6 a.m. I thought, you know, maybe 16 hours in the park may be a bit too much for these kids. My phone was all charged and I had 2 extra batteries, so I was ready to get through the night. Forward to 11:15 p.m. I ran into Deb Wills and Deb Coma, and we compared notes on what we had observed so far. We were at Adventureland and thought about going into Pirates, but the line seemed very, very long. The two Debs headed off to see what was going on in Fantasyland, and I decided to have a Dole Whip. I got into the line at Aloha Isle at 11:40 p.m. There were 35 people in line ahead of me. Oh, and there were 2, maybe 3 lines. The line I was in was well to the side of Aloha Isle, and I could see in the side and see how busy the cast members were in serving the guests that night. When I got to the counter, the cast member smiled and said, "How you doing tonight?" I said, "Well, when I got into line, it was February 29th, and it looks like when I finally get my Dole Whip, it will be March 1st. He laughed and said, "That's a good one, and I believe it with how busy it is." For the record, my Dole Whip was in my hands at 12:04 a.m. I was right by prediction. I ate my Dole Whip as I made my way to the Tomorrowland Terrace, where Len Testa, another of my Walt Disney World Today podcast colleagues, had decided to hold a cupcake meet. When I got there, I found most of my colleagues among the 200 folks who showed up. I made some new friends and found some familiar faces, and there was much to talk about. In fact, I found myself talking until about 2:20 a.m. Now it's 2:30 in the morning on March 1st. Several of us made our way to Main Street USA, and we found something we had never seen or would have never expected. A huge crowd. Yes, I'm going to use the word. A throng of people were heading up Main Street. To put this into perspective, it was very much like what you would see on a summer's day around 9 or 10 in the morning. This was just a tremendous horde of people at 2:30 in the morning. We said goodbye to a few friends as they were heading out, and some 20 minutes later, they would text us saying that the line for the monorail was unbelievable. There was a lot of activity in front of the castle, and we went over there to find several hundred guests taking part in a dance party led by a very energized DJ on top of a float. This party had been going on for a while, and we saw folks ranging in ages from, I would say, 5 to 75 dancing in the streets. Now we moved to 3:30 in the morning. Mike Newell and I headed towards Tomorrowland and decided to ride one of Mike's favorite attractions, the People Mover. So here is a good indication of just how crowded the park was, even at that time of the morning. The conveyor belt that guests stand on to ride up to the platform to get on the cars, that was stopped, and there was a line of guests waiting to board the attraction. Remember, there is not much room at the top, so to avoid anyone getting hurt, the belt was stopped. It was amazing to see the crowds, especially near the Sorcerer's Game kiosks. We decided to give Haunted Mansion a try and rode the attraction sometime around 4:15 in the morning. And you know the part of the ride where you come out of the attic and your dune buggy turns around and you find yourself flat on your back? Well, when that happened, both Mike and I said, oh no, fatigue was setting in. We could have easily fallen asleep. From there, we walked to Adventureland and sat down just outside the Tiki Room and texted folks. People were still going strong. And around 5 o'clock, we saw Len. He strolled by and said he had several cups of coffee. He needed to be awake for an early morning radio interview. It made me think about all those who were not here and what kind of connections they were using to find out how things were going. So it's getting close to 5 a.m. and the Sorcerer's Kiosk near the Pirates of the Caribbean had 17 people in line at 5 o'clock in the morning. Crazy. As we got closer to 5:15 a.m., Mike Newell and I decided that perhaps it would be a good idea to try and do some live streaming and bring it home, so to speak. We made our way towards the partner statue because the memories, the magic, and you was scheduled to be shown at 5:30. My plan was to do a live video stream of this presentation for those who had never seen it and to narrate during the show. When you go through an experience like spending overnight in the Magic Kingdom and you find yourself somewhat fatigued, there is another phenomenon that befalls you, and that is that you discover some type of emotional layers are peeled off. And this results in a short fuse to anger, laughter, or any sort of emotion. Well, the fatigue, the atmosphere, the setting, the memories of that night, and the tangled, I see the light segment of the memories, the magic, and you had quite an effect upon me. I found myself choking up a bit during the narration and decided that what was best for my audience, for me, was silence. As the 6 a.m. hour approached, we all wondered if Kiss Goodnight would wrap up our amazing once-in-a-lifetime experience. Mike and I waited and waited and decided it was not going to happen. So we signed off with our audience. Of course, no fewer than 5 minutes after we went off the air, the music started and Kiss Goodnight had begun. It was an eerie and surreal moment in my life. I have been to Walt Disney World many times. I've been privileged and very lucky to see and experience much of what the Walt Disney Company has offered to its guests. During the showing of Kiss Goodnight, I struggled to take my eyes off the castle, but I realized that this was a special moment, and I had to do whatever I could to capture the images, the feeling, the uniqueness of this moment. I was standing some 10 feet in front of the partner statue and looked around and counted several hundred guests, who along with me were wrapping up their one more Disney day. No one was moving, no one was talking. Even the cast members were caught up in the moment. There were a few young children there, and they too were frozen, mesmerized by the music and lights. We were all experiencing something that no one had ever experienced before. As the very short presentation which was about 3 minutes, carried on. All my fellow guests continued to stare at the castle. My guess is that they too were caught in the moment and realized how special, how unique, and how Disney this moment was. As the show ended with its signature covering of the castle, I noticed everyone took a collective sigh and we all slowly turned and made our way down Main Street, USA. It was approaching 6:30 in the morning, but it felt very much like it was night. I found myself walking very slowly down Main Street, USA. I felt more than ever before that I had formed a new relationship with this park. It's hard to explain how this area, this place, can have such an effect on the many who continue to visit every day, every week, every year. We keep coming back, returning to escape from what life deals to us every day, to smile, to laugh, and to cry. Disney's One More Day experience did not meet my expectations. It truly went beyond and reminded me as to what draws us to this little theme park in Central Florida. After close to, at that time, 40 years of visiting Disney theme parks, I finally truly understood what is meant when I am told visiting Walt Disney World and especially the Magic Kingdom is where dreams come true. For an entire night, through so many experiences, one dream came through for so many guests, and that dream was to leave their cares outside the turnstiles, never to step foot inside this place where, for some reason, allows us to put the stresses of life on hold. That's what we all dream for, and that's what Disney delivered that night. One More Disney Day allowed thousands to dream for 24 straight hours, but those thousands, including me, did not realize until, well, until that 6 a.m. hour when it was all over. Will there be another One More Disney Day? I hope so, because when it happens, sign me up. I can't get enough of that dream. One More Disney Day was over, but the memories will linger. And so that was my experience in 2012, One More Disney Day. I hope someday that they do bring it back again, and I think that I would totally recommend doing whatever you can to experience that. It's very invigorating. It puts you into what I would call the Disney zone, and it would make you feel pretty special that you would experience something like that. Well, thank you for listening to this recollection of that special day in my life. So for my colleagues Michelle Scribner and Chris Aliopoulos, this is Mike Scopa saying we'll see you on the road and in the parks.
We hope you enjoyed listening to today's episode of the Mickey Miles and More podcast. For all of us here at the Mickey Miles and More podcast, this is Rick Gregg saying thanks for listening and all your support. And until next time, we'll see you on the road.